So as Rob mentioned already, this is the fourth Sunday in Advent, the Love Sunday, and it's not even quite a week until Christmas. It is on our doorsteps. It's very near. And I don't know how you feel. I'm excited. I'm ready for Christmas. It's not quite the anticipation that Noah is feeling. He's counting the days. Is it Christmas already? Is it Christmas already? But I'm nevertheless excited and ready for things to take place. And for just the experience of Christmas is a fun one. It brings like joy, excitement, warmth, and the opportunity to see family, to see friends, and just to focus in. So I'm looking forward to that coming about this week. Tonight we will discuss love and light. We've been discussing light in the book of Isaiah and the way light is used to declare that God is arriving, has arrived for his people. And this week it's the biggest stretch of the light theme. I have to use glory that comes out in the passage we're going to look at. And luminous glory is a big component in the Old Testament. So it does fit. We talk about the glory of the Lord. It's often this luminous, bright glory that's associated with it. So that's how it works in this passage. I've been working through various passages and recognizing that Isaiah is more than just the Emmanuel prophecies or the declaration of the Prince of Peace, Wonderful Counselor, this child born to us, that it's this overall theme and trajectory which fills God's people with hope, this longing for peace and the expression of joy that comes out of that, being filled with the love of God that he, in his moving for his people. So we're going to look at one of my favorite passages tonight, one of the passages that talks about God's love, not using the word love, but the description of how God interacts with his people, how he moves, demonstrates that he is a God of love. So I invite you to flip over to Isaiah 40. We're going to look at verses 1 to 11. This is on page 1083 in your pew Bibles. Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem. Tell her that her sad days are gone and her sins are pardoned. Yes, the Lord has punished her twice over for all her sins. Listen, it's the voice of someone shouting, clear the way through the wilderness for the Lord. Make a straight highway through the wasteland for our God. Fill in the valleys and level the mountains and hills. Straighten the curves and smooth out the rough places. Then the glory of the Lord will be revealed, and all people will see it together. The Lord has spoken. A voice said, shout. I asked, what should I shout about? Shout that people are like the grass. Their beauty fades as quickly as the flowers in a field. The grass withers and the flowers fade beneath the breath of the Lord. And so it is with people. The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word of our God stands forever. O Zion, messenger of good news, shout from the mountaintop. Shout it louder, O Jerusalem. Shout and do not be afraid. Tell the towns of Judah, your God is coming. Yes, the sovereign Lord is coming in power. He'll rule with a powerful arm. See, he brings his reward with him as he comes. He'll feed his flock like a shepherd. He will carry the lambs in his arms, holding them close to his heart. He will gently lead the mother sheep with their young. So this is the passage of Isaiah that we're going to be looking at this evening. And so Isaiah is a book that's, there's a lot of debate about its background and its authorship and its and that influences the time frame and the background of when these passages were written. And chapter 40 marks a shift and a turn for the people, and it's speaking, in my view, to a community in exile, a community that has suffered being taken away from the land, the destruction of the temple, being away from the place where the glory of the Lord resided in the temple. And so this message speaks to people who are feeling lost, who are feeling despair, who are feeling the anxiety of loss, the anxiety of being far off and being distant, and feeling that God in some way has remained silent for them, that he has not acted for them, that he has punished them, that he is no longer hearing their cries. And this exile is that profound disassociation from life, from what the norm is, and it influences the people quite greatly. And as you'll often hear in my messages, this is what shapes so much of the background of the Old Testament, as they figure out, who are we as the people of God? Who is God? How does he move for us? How does he act? How does he display his character? So Isaiah 40 breaks into this darkness, breaks into this confusion, breaks into this anxiety, this lostness, this far-offness, and speaks words of comfort to God's people. He speaks into their life. He gives them hope. He gives them opportunity to see joy coming, to embrace love, to wait for God to come, to that place of peace, that inner peace where fear is no longer their situation, this place of hope, love, joy, and peace. And this is the message of Isaiah 40, comfort, comfort my people. It's a time of transition into something new, something good. The time of long waiting is over. Comfort in this passage is an imperative. It's a command. It's a command for the people to be comforted, to live into this new reality of God's people. It's a desire for them to embrace the message of God in their lives, that this is a new time, a new beginning is dawning, and they are to embrace what God is doing. The long wait of exile is over. God is coming. God is arriving. God is acting for his people. They are supposed to live into this reality. And so comfort is given to them as the reality of their new situation as the people of God, as God's people. He acts for them. He is giving them comfort. And they should experience this. They should live into this. They should have that as their state of being, their reality for them. It's not in the far off. It's in the present. It's in the about to happen right now. It's happening. God is arriving in their midst. The passage talks about this speaking tenderly to Jerusalem, speaking tenderly. And this is, if you look in the Hebrew, it'd be to speak to the heart of the people. And this is the line that Ruth uses when she describes how she feels Boaz has been talking to her, to talk about, in a way of love language, talking in a way of intimate language. This is how Ruth describes how Boaz has been talking to her, speaking to her heart. And this is that tenderness that describes the way God desires his people to be spoken to, in this warm intimacy. And as you look in Isaiah 2, those sad days are gone. The time of warfare, the time of being not feeling safe, not feeling security, not feeling peace, these days have come to an end. The last line here talks about verse 2, yes, the Lord has punished her twice over for all her sins. And this is the idea that a guilty party is supposed to repay double of what they have stolen, what they've taken away. And this highlights that Israel has completely paid for their sins. Not that God has punished them double of what he was supposed to, but they have paid their penalty. And now they can embrace this time of comfort, this time of security and safety, to embrace God's love as he enters into their story once again to redeem them. When I think about images of comfort and these warm images, I think about the idea of somebody embracing another person, a friend in a situation of need, and that warm embrace, that hug, that pat on the shoulder, saying, things will be okay, things will be all right, I'm here with you, I'll sit with you in these times of discomfort, this time of disorientation, of frustration. And that's the image that God wants to demonstrate to his people, that he has now arrived and he is that warm embrace for his people, to tell them it's okay, the time of suffering is over, I'm here, I have arrived. He does this with love. Isaiah 43 to 3 to verse 5 is this inviting the people to prepare for God's entry, for God's arrival, to smooth out the rough patches, to level things out, to prepare the correct path for God to enter in. And this, it's a fitting image that of smoothing out a road, because being an exile, they would be returning to the land. So this fits the imagery of a journey preparing the way for God as they prepare their way to return, to resettle and to embrace the new life, the new opportunity that God is making alive in their midst. Here it talks about the glory of the Lord, and this is the glory of the Lord is often associated with a light, with a luminous sort of presence. And this coincides with God's salvation, God's actions for his people. And this is a common image where it's glory and light, and this means salvation. So in this passage, it's highlighting that the glory is being made present, that he is saving his people, he is redeeming them, he is acting for them. And this won't be just something recognized by the people of Israel. It will extend to all flesh. All flesh will recognize what God is doing for his people as he acts out of his love for them. And it's in this section, this word of the Lord that is standing, or that the Lord has spoken these type of things, confirms that God is doing what he said he would do all along. It's picking up on some of those Old Testament promises earlier in the book of Isaiah of judgment, yes, but then restoration, of not leaving them in a place of judgment, not leaving them in exile, but fulfilling his promise to also restore them, also to make them whole again and to extend even beyond that place that they once were, into something greater, something more grand, something that extends not just to the people of Israel, but to the entire world. And this fits with the next section too, from verses 6 to 8, this confirmation that God is not going to leave his people in judgment, in this situation of anxiety and fear. No, that time has ended. This language in Isaiah 40, 6 to 8 is pulled strongly from Isaiah 28, 1 to 6. And it's a passage where there is judgment, and this is united by the withering and fading. This language is used in a passage of judgment. But it's also a passage where hope is exclaimed. And In Isaiah 40, this passage is alluded to sharpen the idea that the new things that were longed for in Isaiah 28 are coming about here in Isaiah 40. They have arrived. They are happening for the people of God. This longing that they had, this future hope that was present even in the judgment, is now being made real in their midst. In this final section, there are other connections as well to earlier passages in Isaiah. And we have up on the slide here, it shows with Isaiah 35, verse 4. Isaiah 35 is this passage of future hope, this future longing. And the way that it's used in Isaiah 9 and 10 highlights that the hope that they once had, only looking to the future, has now arrived into their present. We have the same verb for say, to tell, used in that first section, but it's not speaking just to the hearts of Israel. It's now telling all those around. The command to be strong for the people is then echoed in the power of God arriving for his people. The same root being used in that sentence. Do not fear is spoken to the people, and it's once again spoken to them to not be afraid. The time of fear has ended. The same command to behold your God, recognize that he is indeed coming, and that shift in perspective, that he will come, the Lord your God comes. It's the linking of this passage highlights that the time is now, the time is here to embrace God's love. This is from this observation I picked up from Brevard Child's commentary, and this is how he fleshes it out a little bit. In chapter 40, the perspective has shifted. Zion and Jerusalem are not portrayed simply as awaiting the coming salvation. Indeed, the emphasis is not primarily on the return of the exiles, but focuses foremost on the coming of God. God is arriving in the midst of his people's situation, and he is arriving in this moment, in this now. God has arrived, and the time of fear is over. Behold him. Behold his arrival. Verse 11 completes the image of God as he comes, and he comes with a shepherd imagery, and this is often a royal image in ancient Near Eastern literature. But the way it's fleshed out here in Isaiah is one of care, one of love, one of comfort for the young lambs, one of comfort for his people. I made reference to Psalm 23 last week in talking about the valley of the shadow of death. And this week, I could also pull on Psalm 23 to talk about the shepherd imagery, the way that God shepherds his people, the way he cares for them. And it's really a profound image when we think of this is how God cares for his people, how he cares for us, that he would carry us as lambs in his arms and holding them close to his heart. Some translations, I think, has his cheek right next to his face. And so this is a powerful image of the way God loves his people, the way he draws his people close, a warm embrace. One of the other images that I think of when I think about comfort is that kind of warm blanket on a cold night next to a fireplace and just feeling that safety and security of warmth. And when I look at this shepherd imagery at the end of Isaiah, that's the kind of image that I feel, this warmth embrace of God's love. And so this whole passage, as God declares comfort, comfort for his people, as he is described as that of that shepherd who cares for his lambs with security, with love, with that warm embrace, we recognize the image of God that comes out, and that is one of love. And so it all is met with this God who comes, who breaks forth into the story of his people's life, who breaks into our lives as well. And God, when he comes, he doesn't come empty-handed. He comes bearing gifts, and I use that kind of as a Christmas allusion. But it is true, when God enters into the story, he doesn't just come and then chill out. He comes and he changes things. He makes things new. He fills our hearts with love, with joy, with peace, with hope. It's not just a coming to then be forgotten. It's a coming to change, to fill, to bring safety, security, to announce that the time of fear, anxiety, feeling lost has come to an end, that this is the new reality, one where we can embrace the God of love. And so in this time of Advent, in the time of Christmas, we focus on the miracle of God coming, the miracle of God arriving in history. And this is a profound miracle in and of itself, the miracle that Jesus is indeed born. We often quickly move beyond that to then he grew up, he lived, he died, he was resurrected, he was ascended. But it's a miracle itself that God entered into history, entered as a child, entered as humanity. God with us is a profound, profound beginning, one that is worth pondering and considering. I think of John 3:16, the well-known passage that for God loved the world so much that he gave his one and only son. And that giving of God to humanity, of God giving of himself into this world, is something wonderful, something grand, something we celebrate as we think about Christmas, as his arrival into this story. The verse continues, so that everyone who believes in him will not perish, but have eternal life. And that is the end goal, the goal with which he comes and arrives. After waiting a long time for things to happen, for things to change, it's not a surprise that the people in the time of Isaiah would be wondering about the message of God, would be wondering about these future hopes, and would almost not listen to the words of the prophets. The time is here. So it's almost like Isaiah 40 addresses those. Like, is it really time? Are we still lost? And And the message breaks into their lives and says, yes, it is time. Prepare for this. Prepare the way of the Lord, because he is on his way. He is coming. He is in our midst now. It's easy at times to not make room, to not prepare the way, to not take the necessary place in our lives to make room for the arrival of God in the story. And that's part of the Christmas season, the season of Advent, as we recognize these dynamics of hope, love, joy, and peace. But it's a time of waiting and preparing room, preparing opportunity for God to enter our lives once again and to bring those things. Sometimes there's so much busyness, there's so much other things going on that we don't have the quiet or the stillness to hear, to recognize, to see the way God breaks into our lives. But the God of love breaks in and he offers comfort. He offers joy, peace, hope, and love. He offers the fulfillment of his promises to never forsake us, to be with us, with his Spirit, to love us, to fill our hearts with his love. So it's this Advent time that we wait and we prepare once again to encounter him as a baby, to encounter him in the God with us fulfillment of promises for his people. Before a child arrives, in the time of pregnancy, there's something that all the birth preparation books would say. There's often a nesting period that expectant mothers will feel shortly before the time of birth, where they might have the impulse to clean the entire house or clean the stove. Or I remember that from the birth preparation course, that is a normal response in the process leading up to a birth. But even apart from that, you prepare for the coming of a child with buying a crib so the child won't have to sleep in just whatever is there, like happened for Mary and Joseph. You buy things of preparation. You prepare for that time. Advent is our time of preparing for the arrival of Jesus, the arrival of the baby, to prepare room, to prepare ourselves for his entering of the story. We do this with a willingness to receive his comfort and his love. And this can be hard. This can be a challenge to meet him in a significant and memorable way each and every Christmas season. It can be hard to embrace his love in this time. Busyness, the speed of life, causes this period to fly by, and before we really take time to encounter him, it is over and gone. But sometimes it's even deeper than that. Sometimes we feel that perhaps we are beyond his reach, beyond his love, beyond his comforting embrace. And we sense this is where the people of Isaiah's time were in the time of exile, or this is where of Isaiah 40 in the time of exile. They felt perhaps beyond that place of God's love, beyond his embrace. And with Isaiah 40, verse 2, it's the time of punishment is over, the time of inadequacy is over, the time of fear is over, the time of waiting is over. It is now the time of God's comfort, time of God's love. It's time to embrace the love of God that enters into the world and can enter into our hearts. It's a time to make peace for the love of Christ to enter into us. And this will allow our eyes to see, our ears to hear, and our hearts to love. This message has been very much an inward focus of God speaking to us, using the story of God speaking into the lives of his people in Isaiah 40. And it's important in this time of waiting, this time of Advent, the time of we encounter Jesus, to remember that we are his loved ones, that he breaks into our hearts and could fill us with the love and security that we need, not to fear. The time of fear is over. The time of inadequacy is over. It's now time to encounter God's comfort and his love. But there's also the component that as we're filled with God's love, that love flows out of who we are. The love propels us forward so that we can be that love, that warm blanket, that arms around people who are feeling far off, who need to hear the herald of good news to proclaim that God has arrived in the story, that God has arrived in the story of each and every person who makes room for him to embrace, or makes room for them to embrace him. The love that we encounter in God is the love that moves us to action, to extend warmth and love to others, to announce that God has arrived. As we think through current events, it is clear that that is the situation for so many people who are away from their land, who are seeking a time of comfort. And we can be we can be God's hand and his feet in extending love. This is how the love of God moves us. He moves us out to extend his love to the entire world, to announce that this time has arrived, the time of comfort, the time of love. And so I'd like to also focus on preparation as we move to the table. And in many traditions or in many churches, before communion time, it's one of self-examination, one of preparation where we're all, I always remember the pastor saying, like, examine your hearts to make sure that you take the cup and the bread in the right attitude. And so prepare yourself for communion. And that's not the preparation I'm going to extend this evening. But the thing I'd like to think about is making room, making opportunity, making place for God. It's a time of preparation, this Advent season, a time of waiting, but a time of preparation as well as we wait to encounter the arrival of Jesus in this world. And it's an opportunity to make room, to consider how we can embrace his love and the different barriers or circumstances or feelings that hinder us from encountering him. And so I invite you this evening as you come to the table to consider the ways that you can make room to encounter his love, recognizing that he has come into this world and that he extends his love to us to make us whole, to make us whole. And that he does this through the work of the Spirit. The table is the symbol of the pouring out of Christ's love for all of humanity as he goes to the cross. And it is the place where we enact the reception of his love for our hearts, for our souls, and for our lives. We enact this each and every week, a new opportunity to encounter this Jesus who entered into the world as a baby. It's an opportunity as we partake of his body and his blood to have our eyes opened, to have our ears opened, and to have our hearts opened as well, so that we might embrace his love, but also so that we might extend his love to all flesh. To experience the words of comfort, comfort, but then to go out from this place saying those words, comfort, comfort, God has arrived, God is here. Come and embrace him. Come and make room for him. Come and experience his hope, his love, and his joy, and his peace.